Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the premiere episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts. My name is Dr. Dave DeProspero. To my right is my cousin, Peter Leonard. And to my far right is our friend, Rich Nicodem. Say hi, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you all for joining us here on Paranormal Investigator Radio, live at pbsradio.com. We have a wide assortment of topics that we're going to be covering in this radio show, including the latest in paranormal news and everything about paranormal investigating, including technology, techniques, and even live guests from some well-known people that I'm sure you'll be able to identify. I'm going to turn it over to Pete, who's going to tell you a little bit about the show, who we are, and we'll go from there.
Well, thank you, David. Since this is our first show, I'd like to take a few minutes out there and tell everybody what we're all about. I grew up in a house that was haunted. I had my first experience at about 7 years old, and for me it was something that never stopped. And this is where it ended up. About 10 years ago, David and I started Rome Investigators of the Paranormal with our main intention of helping people. And since then, we've investigated hundreds of locations, helping many families, many people deal with the paranormal. Because after all, what do you do when you're the victim of the paranormal? And there are really victims. This does affect people's lives. We like to have fun. We do the convention circuit. We do parties. And we host public events, presentations. Any way we can help, we're also involved in historical fundraising. And if your location is up for RIP, we're more than happy to be involved with you. So what do we got on tap next?
Well, tonight we're going to have a unique show. We're going to talk about some paranormal news from around the world. And Rich has a very special guest that's going to be coming online with us, Chris Moon. I'm sure many of you have heard of him or have seen him on TV. We're going to get an opportunity to chat with Chris. And we're going to learn a little bit about technology and discuss some techniques. Sound good?
Well, I'd like to start out with about a week ago, I attended a convention out in Gettysburg called Phenomenology 105. We were set up there as a vendor. Very interesting time. The one thing I love about Gettysburg is the history that's associated with it, and unfortunately, the amount of deaths that took place there. The paranormal is actually a big topic of discussion out there. Now, the phenomenology had a few people you might have heard of. They had the haunted collectors, John Zaffis, his daughter Amy, son Chris. Brian Kano was there, also set up with his group. Josh Gates from Destination Truth. And I'm sorry, what was his other show, Scared? Have you seen that this week? That was great.
Great show.
Keeps it interesting. I'd love to be locked in one of those houses with it.
For 5-7 days.
And I guess they had a few major movie celebrities there. If anybody's ever watched the Halloween films, the pre-Rob Zombie ones, they had Tony Moran there, the original Mike Myers.
The only Michael Myers who ever showed his face on camera from the original movies, by the way.
Chip Coffee. And also the guys from Taps, Britt Griffith, Dustin Parry, Bruce Tango. All in all, it was a good time. There were a lot of panel discussions. You sit in on a lot of these, and actually you learn a lot from people who've been in this field for a long time. But for those who know me, I like to eat a lot, so In our downtime, I went and had dinner at the Dobbin House. Dobbin House was built in 1776, which is amazing that the place actually was built during a revolution and then seen a civil war right on its doorstep. The food was out of this world, and I guess it has a paranormal history all to itself as well. I do recommend that. So, do we have any events of our own coming up, or...?
Actually, Pete, we are working on one right now. We've done an event last year at the Halbert House, which is in historic Boonville, New York, for all of you out there who are not familiar with the Halbert House. It was actually featured on Haunted Collector, Seasons 2, where they did an actual investigation there with the crew. So we did an event there last year. It was very successful for us. It actually took place in June, one of the hot summer months, which I'm sure everyone appreciated with all the fans going and the air conditioners going. It got quite warm in there. But
it was steamy that day.
Yeah. And we had a couple skunks outside, too, as well, if you remember.
Right.
I think Dave was out there trying to...
It's a baby skunk.
To pet one or something.
No.
I'm sure what was going on with that.
Just watching it.
So we're right now, we're putting together an event tentatively for June 29th through the 30th, and it's going to be a weekend-long event, and our featured guest is going to be, again, John Zaffis, who does such a phenomenal job for us. And one thing I really like about John is that he's so good with the attendees at the event. He socializes with them, gives him advice, spends time to answer the questions. He's just such a great guy to work with. And I know he's just got so much wisdom and knowledge of the paranormal, and he likes to share that with people. So we're also going to have some workshops going on. We're going to have a couple different presentations. RIP, we do some workshops on our technology stuff. And John also has one on advanced ghost hunting techniques. And then we'll have an investigation at Saturday night, lights out at the Halbert House, which... should be uneventful. You guys are going to be there, right?
Yes, we are.
I think that's a banker.
We are, Peter and I, in the field, are known as the paranormal cousins for obvious reasons. We are cousins, not identical, and we investigate the paranormal. So we are going to be giving a couple presentations there. We're going to be doing some training seminars. We wrote a few books, and we have a couple more coming out before the summer, and we're going to be premiering a couple of those works and doing some signings and, you know, just being there for people.
Our biggest one is coming up at Lake George on April 26th. It's called ParaHistoryCon, Preserving the Haunt. It's going to be a good time. Again, one of their guest stars is John Zaffis. Brian Kano will also be making an appearance. Joe Chen and Adam Berry from TAPS. And I think they said they're doing a ghost hunt of the historic fort that's out there. So that should also be a good time.
Fort William Henry.
On May 6th, we'll be appearing at the historic Cam Roden Church in Floyd. We'll be doing a presentation out there. That's one of our, basically our training grounds. Tested all of our new equipment there.
That's actually where I did my very first investigation with you guys.
That's right, I remember that many years ago.
Yeah, I got some amazing results from there. Moving ahead, when it comes to events, we have to mention ScareCon.
Gotta mention ScareCon, absolutely.
For those of you who don't know what ScareCon is, it was formerly known as Scaracuse, and it's an event that will take place September 13th through the 16th at the Event Center at Turning Stone Casino, which is in Verona, New York. It's an event that celebrates horror and sci-fi for the whole weekend. There'll be celebrities there. There'll be movies, VIP parties, panel discussions. And, of course, RIP will be presenting there once again. Everything goes as planned. So hope we'll see everybody out there. There was a lot of groups that were there last year.
There was a ton of groups. If anybody's out there listening from the Northeast, the attendance at ScareCon last year at Turning Stone Casino, there were thousands and thousands of people that went through the doors that weekend. And there's a lot of well-known celebrities, both from the sci-fi world as well as from horror films, mainstream Hollywood shows. So if you are free that weekend, Google ScareCon, Google Turning Stone Casino. You'll find out a lot more information. It's definitely a good event.
And, of course, our good friend Jason Hawes will be there.
From TAPS.
See him again.
Yep, absolutely.
My most memorable moment from last year, if you remember, David, was being choked out by Jason himself. Not from Tad.
Not that Jason. The real Jason from the movies. That's right. The man is like 6'5". His arms are bigger than my head, and he choked us all out.
Yeah, and he likes to wear those leather gloves, too, so he gets a really good grip.
Always
on your
has
neck.
The gloves.
And it's Kane Hodder, of course, we're talking. All right, well, you know, while I'm thinking of it, David, I was at Phenomenology. I had the table set up, and a young lady come through, and she stopped, looked at everything we had set up, and then she asked me a question. She said, "Is your group scientific?" Without hesitation, I looked at her, and I said, "No, really no group is." The look on her face, she was pretty much startled, sort of like she had a few zingers she wanted to send my way and stump me, but then it took her a second. She thought about it. She said, "Well, you spent all this money on equipment, all this time you spend. How are you not scientific?" I mean, do you think I was wrong telling her that answer? Or?
No. I mean, the work, the groundwork that TAPS has laid to really get the paranormal field to move into the direction of scientific rigor is a method that's really been adopted by pretty much all the groups out there now. If you talk to any group out there, they all have thermal imaging cameras. They all have EMF sensors. They all have, this wide assortment of technology gear. But to say that it's scientifically valid or scientifically grounded is inaccurate. We do the best that we can. But even despite all the research that we've done, all of the work that all these other groups do, we still don't know a single thing about the paranormal. We know that there's something out there. We know that in certain circumstances we can interact with it, but we really don't know why it works, how it works, or when it works. And for any of you out there that know about the scientific method, I mean, one of the primary factors of the scientific method is that whatever test you do has to be repeatable. And although we use the same equipment, although we use the same techniques, it's never repeatable. Very rarely does the same experiment result in the same phenomena over and over again. So to say that it's a scientific approach, we try to use science, we try to use technology to the strongest that we can, but I think as a field, it's still being a grounded science.
I mean, realistically, I mean, if you're dealing with a 200-year-old house that's located in a village, I mean, how do you really make sterile conditions? I mean,
that's right. You need a control, and then you need the experimental group, and, without knowing exactly how things work, it's virtually impossible.
I mean, I know we're a little ahead of the ball that we do our hunter question questionnaire, we do our forms for each of our piece of equipment, and then we compile the long way from being scientific.
That's right.
Paranormal Investigator Radio, hosted by the Brown Investigators of the Paranormal. Visit us online at www.roaminvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
Well, guys, at this time, I think we're going to talk about tech just a little bit. Based on that last conversation that we just had, a lot of groups out there use a lot of the same equipment. And throughout the course of the show, we're going to discuss many, many different devices, how they work, how they apply to the field of the paranormal. Tonight, I want to talk about one that pretty much everybody's familiar with, and that's the K2. And the formal name is the K2 Near Field Electromagnetic Field Sensor. For those of you that have seen it, you all know that it's a small device. It's usually a gray device that has 5 LEDs across the top of it. And as you approach a magnetic field, the lights light up. A lot of teams use it for question and answer sessions. If there's anything here with us, please come close to the K2. About 18 months ago, I had a discussion with Keith Tupper, who is the president of K2 Enterprises, and he's just a couple towns over, so it was very convenient to have this discussion with him. But we really approached him telling him that there's a lot of people out there that really need to know how best to use this in the paranormal field. And we also told him that there's a few things that could be done to the paranormal meter that would really make it paranormal friendly. And up until we had that conversation, you really had no idea that the K2 was that widely used in the paranormal field. So through that 18 months, we discussed many different topics, including changing the shape of the device, adding in digital readouts, adding in temperature readout capabilities, and in the end, what we decided to go with was this new device. It's black, and you'll notice if you see the new black K2 that it has a fluorescent label strip on it, and that's for a purpose. Using full-spectrum cameras, which most teams use now, which include infrared, ultraviolet, and some visible light, these color bars fluoresce. So the old meter, the gray meter, if you recorded it with IR or UV cameras or full spectrum cameras, you would see that it stood out like a sore thumb in the scene of whatever you were recording. This new meter is made of a special black case material. It's not just a black color, it's a new type of plastic that absorbs all the different wavelengths of light that are typically used in the paranormal field. So this remains optically neutral in the field. So if you have it sitting on a dresser and the entire scene is dark, you're not going to have a bright white meter, distracting the field of view. The other nice thing is that because the black case is neutral in the field, the only things that do jump out are both the LEDs, which are the same LEDs that were used in the original version of this meter, and also the brand new fluorescent color bars, because they do fluoresce under infrared and especially ultraviolet light. So if you have a chance, it would be worth your while to jump onto Google, and you could type in K2 Black or Black K2. You could even go onto eBay, or you could go onto some of the more well-known paranormal liquidation centers out there, and as we've been saying for years, we're not at the point yet where you could just go to your nearest super center and go down the paranormal aisle. So you either have to make your own equipment, or you have to use equipment that's been designed for some other industry, or you have to use something that was specifically made for the paranormal field. And this device right here is the first in a long line, hopefully a long line, of new devices by K2, which were specifically developed for paranormal use. So we've been using it. We used it in a variety of investigations so far. We've really put it through its paces. And yeah, we're a little bit biased based on the fact that we developed it with K2. But we have also identified some shortcomings of it, and we've also identified some strengths of it. So it is a tool that we're going to definitely make extensive use of. And we just want everybody to know out there, if you go out there and you purchase yourself a black K2, you heard it here first on Paranormal Investigator Radio, and we were actually the co-developers of this brand new K2 meter, so that's something that we're very, very proud of.
That's why we keep you on the payroll, Dave.
Thank you, absolutely.
Visit us online, paranormalinvestigatorradio.com.
Okay, we are back. This is Rich. And first of all, I want to introduce you to our guest for tonight's episode of Paranormal Radio. His name is Christopher Moon. Let me give you a quick little introduction on Chris Moon. First of all, Chris, are you there?
I am here.
Awesome.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
Awesome. Listen, we want to thank you for taking some time out of your night to speak with us. But before we do that, let me just give everybody an introduction on you so they can bring you up to speed. Chris is a fixture at many of the metaphysical and paranormal conventions that happen around the United States and Canada. He also speaks at college campuses across the country, lecturing on the paranormal and spirit communication research that he's involved in, along with different techniques and providing some positive evidence, as well as interactive gallery readings and paranormal investigation using his device called the Spirit Telephone, which he's going to tell us more about tonight. His television appearances include, most notably, True TV Network's Door to the Dead. He's also been on the NBC's Today Show, and of course, A&E's Paranormal State. And it was an awesome episode, too, by the way. He also appeared on Travel Channel's Most Extreme Places to Stay and Ghost Adventures. So please welcome Chris Moon.
Hey, guys.
So, hey, Chris, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. It's a pleasure to be here. Hey, we got a couple different questions we want to ask you here so our guests out there in our listening world can learn a little bit more about you and some of the things that you do. You're pretty controversial in the paranormal field. You have this telephone of the dead device that you do a lot of investigations with, and you take it around to a lot of conventions, and you do gallery readings with, and a lot of people want to know a little bit more about this. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, what is this telephone of the dead, Frank's box?
Well, it's interesting. The easiest way to put it is the completed version of Thomas Edison's telephone to the dead. And I've told the story a million times about how I was actually contacted by Frank Sumption, who had claimed to actually put this device together. And I honestly thought he was crazy. I didn't think there was any way. And when I went to go investigate it, I still, upon hearing the device for the first time, didn't think there was anything to it. I thought that it sounded like a broken radio. And it took me to actually take it out on an investigation at the Selly House in Atchison, Kansas, before I was able to actually determine that it worked. And that's when we actually coined it the Frank's Box, because we didn't have another name for it at that point. So it has a few different names. We started out with Frank's Box, became the telephone to the dead after that, spirit phone, but essentially the same device. But what it allows us to do is have direct two-way communication with the other side.
So Thomas Edison, not only is a pioneer in developing the telephone itself, but was also developing a telephone to the dead?
Yeah, and it sounds absolutely crazy if you hear that. You know, you think the scientific mind, this inventor, why would he be working on a communication device with the other side? And the quick story behind it is that his mother was a spiritualist. He was very close with her. And when she passed away, he started to reexamine some of his views on the afterlife. And, of course, the theory that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only change form, we being energy. He believed that he could actually create a device that would make it possible to communicate between the two worlds. And, it was a legend for a long time, but he actually talked about his work in Scientific American and Forbes. So he put everything out there for people to see. And, of course, his contemporaries didn't want this all to be known and this be his legacy. So they tried to squash it the best that they possibly could, but that documentation is still out there today.
Now, I've actually seen your version of the Frank's Box telephone to the dead, and obviously we have a Radio Shack hack version here ourselves, but it doesn't look anything like the one that you have. Yours is a lot bigger. It's got different kind of connections on it, where ours is almost like a glorified AM radio, if you will. So with that being said, tell me about what was like the most interesting conversation that you've had using the Frank's Box.
I could literally pull thousands of different examples that were just absolutely incredible. I'd say that one of the more interesting ones that I ever had was with John Lennon, which was just a crazy experience. And it was all done completely accidental. We didn't go out seeking him or anything along those lines, but he actually came through the device. And kind of a long story short, when I first started using the device, everybody in the world thought I'd lost my mind. Even my staff thought I was crazy at that point. So a lot of them were contacting me different ways and saying, you know, is this really happening? Is this real? And I tell them about how I was having experiences with this device. And one of the people who got in touch with me, her name was Lucy. She was an editor at Haunted Times at that time. And she was talking to me over something called Yahoo Messenger Chat, which is this voice chat that goes back and forth. It's, now it seems ancient, but it was really popular at the time. And we were talking back and forth, and she said, does this thing really work? And I said, well, you can try it for yourself. I'll flip the thing on, and you can just go ahead and see what comes through. So I turned on the device in the office that I was sitting in at the time, and she was actually in Portland. I was in Denver. And I hear her talking to this machine back and forth and kind of laughing at herself for doing it. And then all of a sudden I know she starts having this conversation, and she becomes really engaged with it. So she starts asking questions. She starts receiving answers to her questions, and it sounds like somebody with an English accent talking back and forth. And the laughter suddenly goes silent, and a woman's voice comes through, and then she starts crying. So I wasn't quite sure what had happened. It was only a couple of days later that I spoke to her about what had taken place, and she said that it was amazing because when she started going through the device, she wanted to talk to John Lennon. She'd always been fascinated with him and really couldn't understand why, but she'd always had his posters and his music and all sorts of different things. Well, she actually made contact with him, and he started joking back and forth with her. And I guess at one point said, there's someone who wants to speak to you. And she said, what do you mean? And it turns out that her mother, who had passed away from cancer when she was 2 years old, came through the device. And she said that she passed along a very special message to her. But the key behind this was is that she said she would have never asked for her mother because she would have been too afraid to. But Lennon actually was almost like an ambassador who came through, spoke to her, and calmed her down about speaking to her mother. So that's how that all came to be.
So there are spirits, they're actually active.
Oh, I'm having trouble hearing you guys.
I just said, this device, there's actually spirits that you can communicate with. They actually act as messengers, delivering messages to people.
I apologize, I cannot hear you guys.
Are you there? Can you hear us, Chris?
Oh, got you now.
Okay, so can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. We actually have a Frank's box ourselves, as I mentioned before, and we did an investigation several months ago. It was a private investigation. I know Pete was involved with it, and we actually were using it to try to communicate with the homeowner's deceased spouse, and there was three specific questions that she wanted to ask, and we didn't have any knowledge of the questions or what the answers were. So she would tell us, all right, well, ask my husband how he died. And it came back with the answer of cancer, a very specific cancer. And then you see her eyes well up a little bit. That was true. And then the second question is, okay, well, maybe I just mentioned that. Okay, ask another question. So the next question came to be, what was his favorite hobby, sport? Okay. So said, what is your favorite hobby sport? It came back skiing. Of course, now she's starting to get a little teary-eyed again because that was his favorite sport. And then for the trifecta, she said, if you can tell me where his favorite place in the whole entire country to ski was. And this gentleman used to travel around the country, I think even to Europe once in a while to ski. So we went ahead and said, where was your favorite place? And he came back with the answer, which was a local ski place. And that right there proved to me that there is some validation to this.
And that was the middle of August, was it? So, I mean, skiing really wouldn't be on the radio at that point, I don't think.
I'm sorry, but I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's a point that I like to make a lot when I'm doing my sessions and things along those lines, is exactly that. You'll have skeptics that will come in and tell you, well, it's random this and noise and sounds from the atmosphere, so on and so forth. But the key behind it is if you're doing a question and answer session, and the messages, the voices that come in and give you specific answers to those questions, it's undeniable. I mean, I don't even know what the odds would be of specific words and phrases coming through at that time.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you a question on that. I mean, most of these groups have these Frank's box, or they have devices like the Ovilus, or some kind of device for communication. How do we know who we're talking to?
Yeah, that's always a good question. I always tell people to be extremely cautious when they have these conversations. I feel confident when I do because I've done it for so long, and I really have trusted spirits on the other side, as crazy as that sounds, that I can go to and know who I'm speaking with. But I've seen some groups have gotten into some serious trouble using these devices, and To me, it's much like a Ouija board. The device is extremely helpful from time to time. Things are going very well, and then all of a sudden it just turns, and it gets extremely negative, and at that point, that seems like all that comes through these machines. And I do believe that there are messages coming through at that point. I believe it's legitimate. It's just that I think we've talked about it before, is the fact that you get all this, you know, cursing that comes through, things that would never make it on the airwaves, which proves it's legitimate. But I think you're dealing with some lower level entities at that point.
Well, and that leads to my next question. We were in discussions we've had with some people about Frank's boxes and spirit communication. We were told that demons like the lower frequencies. Do you have any comment to that?
Yeah, I think you have to take a step back and really kind of appraise what your definition of demon is right off the bat. But these, I call them astral parasitic life forms that are out there that kind of communicate with us and need a host to exist in our reality on this side. They do seem to stay more in the lower frequencies for whatever reason. Nobody knows what that is. We also found that with shadow people, from our experience, when we have any communication with shadow people, it's usually on those lower frequencies.
Interesting. So let me ask you another question here. In some of the discussions that we've had using our brain, we've got some answers, some replies with a lot of profanity, to say the least. So, I mean, what kind of spirits do you think that we're talking with that use that kind of language or profanity? Any ideas on that?
Well, yeah, I think that I think some people jump the gun immediately when you start getting the profanity coming through. And, you know, most of the time you're just dealing with, you know, what I would consider to be a spirit entity talking to you, communicating that the way they probably did in life. But on in certain circumstances, if it's done for shock value, if it's done to just insult and cause pain, then I think you may be dealing with something of a lower level entity.
Well, I truly believe that if people were mean in life, they're still mean in death. So I subscribe to that training.
I say the exact same thing. I say you are there who you were here. I don't think that there's a magic light that you go through that transforms you into something else. So that energy continues on for good or for bad.
And, you know, Chris, it really speaks to the validity of this technology. Based on the fact that we do receive swear words coming through, because we all know that on the radio you wouldn't be getting that kind of language. So where else would it be coming from, you know?
Exactly, especially the F-bombs that seem to drop quite frequently. That there's just no way. And it's really interesting. I actually had another situation, not necessarily having to do with language, but I was at the Lizzie Borden house doing an event up there. And had a radio show host who came up and joined us, and it's when the device was first coming out and extremely controversial. And later on, I found out that he was very skeptical of everything that was going on, which is fine. We're used to that. But he was doing a session with the device and asking some specific questions, and it seemed like he was getting some very direct answers to what he was asking, but all of a sudden he got this shocked look on his face, and he actually left the room. And later on, I was able to catch up with him and ask him and say, what's going on? Are you okay? And he said, well, yeah. He goes, you know, honestly, I'm a skeptic and so on and so forth. He goes, and yeah, I was getting some answers to the questions, but, you know, I could rationalize that away until I heard this thing come through. I said, what exactly did you hear come through? And he goes, well, you're not going to believe me when I tell you. And I said, well, what is it? He goes, you know, I was questioning in my mind if this was real, and I needed something to tell me if it was absolute. And I said, okay, what was it? And essentially what had happened was he heard a snippet of a commercial that ran when he was probably 5 or 6 years old that he used to hear on the radio constantly, but this company had been closed for years and years and years. And just hearing that fragment come back through for him was enough for him to know that someone was trying to send him that message.
That's incredible. I tell you, you know, being a skeptic, because I was a skeptic when I first got involved in this myself, not a closed mind, but an open mind is kind of like, you want to show me there's a paranormal, prove it to me. And, you know, through my travels and dealings with people such as yourself and John Zaffis and other paranormal people that I've dealt with, I would hear stories and they'd tell about cases. And then when I got involved in the paranormal itself, I always was a school, you know, show me, and then I'll believe it. And then with a few investigations, I actually came across a few things that changed me from a skeptic to a believer. So I can
absolutely
certainly see where he was coming from on that. So I know that you're in the process of doing some modifications to the Telephone of the Dead. Care to share that with us?
Correct. Yeah, we Frank and I actually just started on this project, I guess it was about a year and a half now, back. I had actually been receiving some messages through the spirit phone that were talking about spirits wanting to show themselves, crazy as that sounds. And I couldn't figure out how it worked. So I'd hounded Frank for quite a few years about trying to work on this project, and he's kind of hemmed and hawed and didn't really want to do a whole lot with it. Well, he contacted me about a year and a half ago and said, hey, I think we should get back on this. I've got some ideas. So we started working on some things, and he put together some technology. I have no idea how he's able to do the things he does. He's incredible. But we actually started working on the first video version of the Telephone to the Dead, or the spirit phone. And we had some initial results that came through that both of us were fairly impressed with, but we actually were able to take the device out to Atchison, Kansas, and use it on a shoot for a TV show called Ghost Box. And when we were able to do this, we actually had an amazing image of this woman come through during the session. And if anybody's interested in taking a look at that, they can just stop by my website, which is chrismoonpsychic.com, and the video is right on the front page. You can see it for yourself, but it still blows me away every time I see it.
So you're saying that you actually got an image from Frank's box, a full-blown image.
Absolutely.
Now, hold that thought. Chris, hold that thought. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back to that in just a second.
If you have questions, news, requests, new technology, team updates, event updates, or if you would like to be a guest on our show, email us at submit@paranormalinvestigatorradio.com.
Okay, so we are back. This is paranormalradio.com, and we're speaking with Chris Moon. You can find more information on Chris at his website at chrismoonpsychic.com. And just before the break, we were talking about Frank's box, and you were sharing with us that you did an investigation where you actually used the device, a modification of the device, to actually project a photo. Can you tell us a little bit?
You just broke up on me a little bit.
Oh. I was just saying how essentially you used the Frank's box to actually project a photo during an investigation.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit more about that. That's very intriguing.
Yeah, like I said, it's even mind blowing to me. You know, every time I do a session using that device, it's incredible. I never get bored doing it. I'm never not amazed by what comes through. But you know, when we got that image that came through, it really, really caught us off guard, because what we've been capturing up to that point, or at least what we thought we were seeing, were some very shadowy type of figures that were coming in, which you could basically chalk up to, you know, your imagination or your mind. So we weren't quite sure what we were getting, but it's very clear. You can see in this little snippet, as I mentioned, it's online, of Ghost Box. They were panning through the room as we went into this old house that turned into a museum. And as they're panning across the wall, you can very clearly see a picture of this woman, very classic, late 1800s, early 1900s, with the hair in the bun and the defined clothes with the high collar and necklace and the whole thing. And what was really amazing about this is later we found out that was the owner of the property. And her image is the exact same image that comes through on this device. It was incredible.
Now, you said up on your website, up on YouTube?
It's right on my website. If you go, I put it on the front page, so right when you go to the page, you can see it right there in the center. Just click it, and you can watch the whole clip.
Okay, so for our viewing audience, if you want to see that, go to chrismoonpsychic.com, and you can see that right on the front page. Actually, Pete's got a question for you here. It's kind of a controversial question, but go ahead, Pete.
Oh, I hate to say, I know you travel all over the U.S. Which coast has the wilder spirits, the east or the west coast?
You're trying to start a turf war. I see how it is.
Sorry.
Yeah, You know what it comes down to? I'm sure, as you guys know, you can find activity pretty much everywhere. It just depends on the location that you go to. I'd say personally for me, I've actually had more experiences on the East Coast, at least very memorable experiences, especially in the Northeast, where it's an extremely physical type of activity. And when it comes down to it, you can actually deal with some older energies out there that I think have more ability to communicate with you and also touch you and things along those lines. So, you know, I've talked about my experiences in places like the Lizzie Borden House, and it's pretty incredible.
So, of all the places you've investigated, which to you is the most memorable? You had the best investigation with the best evidence.
Of any location I've ever been to?
Any one you've ever been to since you started?
You know, I'd have to make it a tie between three, actually. I would say number one would probably be Sally House, Atchison, Kansas. Just an incredible amount of physical things that took place there. And the evidence that we brought back is undeniable. Changed my entire view on the paranormal and the afterlife. Lizzie Borden House would definitely be tied right up there. That's another location with a lot of physical interaction with spirits, a lot of great evidence we pulled back out of there. And I'd say three, Peabody Mansion, Denver, Colorado. I don't throw around the demonic word a whole lot. I know that a lot of people like to use demonic constantly. I don't. But this is a true demonic entity inside this location, and it would be considered a demonic haunting. And it's still just as active as today as it ever has been.
You know, the term demon, it's a lot of times when we get requests to do investigations, if something goes on, usually when we read the email or we get the telephone call, the homeowner always mentions the word demon. There's a demon in my house. I've got demons. Come help me. And I really think that people don't understand the terminology. And we'll get into another program, another episode. We'll discuss it in detail. But people like to throw the word around demon. It's I guess, very cliche. So
they do. Well, and a lot of that – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
No, go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, people throw around the word demon, I think a lot of that has to do with our upbringing, too. I think that a lot of it has to do with religious preconceptions and things like that, because we're all brought up a certain way. We've all been brought up in a certain belief system. And a lot of times we'll deal with people that immediately, if something unexplained happens, it has to be demonic because, you know, any communication with something unexplained would be considered evil or demonic. And I think that's the reason we get that quite a bit.
Chris, I do have a question for you. Speaking of the afterlife and, you know, people's belief systems, I like to ask this question to people who do this for a living. Death, when you transition, what is your opinion of what happens to us? And I'm not talking about from a religious perspective. I know that there's a lot of, you know, different beliefs of heaven and religious ties to stuff like that. But from your perspective, when we cross over, okay, what's there? Where do we go? What do we see?
Well, from everything I've been able to gather over the years, essentially what happens, and I'm sure you guys have probably covered this in past programs, so I apologize if that's the case. But there's a lot of people out there who are unaware that when we actually pass away, the human body loses mass, loses weight. And it's a very small amount. And basically, science has tried to explain this away for years. It's breath or liquid or whatever the case might be. But there's just been no explanation to this point where that weight goes. From everything that I've seen, I believe that that's actually spirit energy that contains some sort of mass. And when that energy leaves the body, I think what happens is that there's a natural vortex that opens up for all of us. I think it's just the way things take place, a doorway, a gate. And when that doorway opens, you have different types of spirits. The first type of spirit will move towards that gate, move straight through, and at that point, that's what I would consider to be an intelligent spirit, which essentially means they know who they are, they know where they are, they can communicate and come and go at will. The other type of spirit that we deal with is what I consider to be an earthbound spirit. I have to be really careful when I say that because of the religious connotation and the Hollywood connotation that goes along with that. But essentially what happens is I believe that a spirit will move towards the light, but will basically at that point make the decision not to move through. And what they do is they actually lock themselves off in a world between our physical world here and the spirit world on the other side. Catholics would call it purgatory. And essentially, at that point, I believe that they're very alone. I think they lose all sense and track of time and basically wait. And the interesting thing is that when we've done sessions with different types of spirits, we'll ask them, we'll say, you know, why don't you move through? Why don't you just move on to the other side? Well, usually the fact is that they fear punishment. They think that there's some fire and brimstone that's waiting for them should they go through that light. And the light's always available to them. But the interesting thing and ironic thing is, if you talk to what we consider an intelligent spirit, they'll tell you that there is no fire and brimstone on the other side. Everyone ends up in that same place, and the punishment is in that middle ground. So essentially, they're in this form of self-punishment. And it takes sometimes a medium to come along, or paranormal investigators, or whoever the case might be, to actually speak to them and just let them be heard and give them assurance to let them know it's okay to move on to the next world.
Now, you actually have some video footage, which I saw a few weeks back at a convention. You were showing it to me, where you have a video of someone that, right at the moment that they pass away, and you can actually see the image of an apparition step out of the body.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that video. Where did you get that?
It was one of those really interesting cases, and I think most of us who do investigations, I'm sure you guys have the same thing. Sometimes the best evidence that you get is the evidence you don't mean to capture. What had taken place was this woman's uncle was in the stage of passing. So the entire family was heading to his house to try to say, get his last words and say their goodbyes and things along those lines. An extremely negative man, from what I understand. And everyone was racing in. He was in hospice in his own home. And she had raced into the room, and she pulled out her old cell phone and started trying to record his last words to keep them. And as she started to record on her cell phone, he actually passed away right at that moment, exhaled his last breath. So she assumed nothing had happened, and she actually closed the phone, walked away, and it was several months, or maybe even years after, and she went back and she was kind of looking what she had on that phone because she was moving to a new one. And she, as she was going back and actually found that old video, she just looked at it, I guess, for the memories or curiosity, whatever the case might be. And when she replayed it, she could clearly see, as he's exhaling his last breath, you can see a shadow, an energy that actually moves his body at that very moment. And it's, again, one of those very, very incredible videos. I looked at it about 1,000 times looking for a, quote-unquote, natural explanation about what might be taking place. But you can clearly see it's a spirit energy leaving the body at that moment. And what was interesting in talking to a little bit more about it is that I guess when he had actually died, when he took that last breath, it sounded like some of the equipment in the room had shaken a little bit, and the front door opened and slammed, and they thought someone was there, but there was no one there. So we're wondering if this wasn't only a spirit energy, but maybe a negativity or a possession that was leaving the body at that time.
Well, it's some amazing footage, and I've watched it numerous times, and it never ceases to amaze me the people that stop by and you show that footage to, how their mouth just hangs there wide open. They're like, oh, no way. I mean, it's that obvious. You can see it happen. So
it is really shocking, and that's what's always amazing to me, because people ask you, was that photoshopped? Was that altered in any way? Or, you know, even with the spirit phone and things like that, they'll say, well, you know, there has to be some way that you're manipulating that or doing this and that and making it do that. And I always tell people, you know, if I was going to do something where I was actually going to fake evidence, I would make it look a lot more impressive than it actually does, because sometimes it's hard to see the clarity or hear the clarity that comes through. But when you have a chance to actually examine it and see it for yourself, it's pretty incredible.
Well, Chris, we thank you for being a guest on our show tonight. And for everyone out there in our viewing audience, if you or listening audience, excuse me, if you want more information on Chris Moon, go to chrismoonpsychic.com. Chris, it's been a pleasure. We appreciate you, and hope we'll have you on a future edition.
Love to do it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Whether you're an investigator, enthusiast, or ethereal spirit, we are bringing you the information from this realm and beyond. Paranormal Investigator Radio. With your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nikita, and Dr. David DeGrasso.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to us. On our next shows, please feel free to call in, ask us questions. You can Skype questions in, call them in. We'd be interested in hearing what you have to say, and we'll be more than happy to talk with you. I spend a lot of my time at night looking on the internet and perusing paranormal topics. And I came across one, it kind of made me chuckle the other day. It's the top 10 signs that your house is haunted. The number 10 reason is strange smells. And anybody who knows me, well, that alone would make me haunted then, I guess. But I've been seeing an actual increase in not only sightings and a lot of interest in Sasquatches. You know, we just want to point out there, when we say paranormal, it also includes UFOs, cryptozoology, parapsychology. If it's unexplainable, we investigate it.
Of course, there's a TV show, Finding Bigfoot, which, by the way, I faithfully watch DVR every week.
And I'm surprised they haven't found any around here.
Really?
Although we're not that far away. Where is it? Whitehall, where there's a lot of... Maybe we'll get together some kind of expedition and bring some people out and look for...
An RIP Bigfoot expedition.
That's right.
I can see it in the works. Get your backpacks out.
Well, I guess if you're interested in the other nine signs that your house is haunted, there's odd dreams, people or places you don't know frequently show up. Eighth would be a feeling that you're being watched, sort of like something's always behind you. You're never alone. Seven, the heaviness in the air. You're having trouble breathing and not just atmospheric conditions. Strange noises. We're not just talking about houses settling. We're talking about walls scratching. Another type of unexplainable noises. You got the hair temperature changes. And I can attest to this one firsthand. In the house I grew up in, upstate New York, we only have three seasons. We have winter, summer, and August. And I'll tell you what, in August, you could be in the basement on a 150-degree day outside, and you could actually see your breath. So, I mean, when we're talking temperature changes, believe me, it's noticeable. Things moving around is number four. Number three, being touched. Rich actually got to witness that happening to me once on an investigation with the thermal.
Oh, that was intense. That was intense. We were doing an investigation. It was a private investigation, and Pete and I were in adjoining rooms separated by a bathroom. And I had the thermal, and Pete kept letting me know that something kept tugging on him and touching him in the room. So I got the thermal out, and I said, all right, Pete, ask it to touch you on the back. So he stood there, and I was in the other room, and he kept saying, touch my back, touch my back. And then, of course, he started to say, Rich, I think something's touching my back. And as I watched it with the thermal camera, I could see a small handprint in yellow, his heat signature, appear on his back. It was absolutely amazing.
That was something I won't forget.
Of course, we didn't have a DVR hooked up to the recordings.
Which leads us to the last two, sudden changes in behavior. Most of all, ladies and gentlemen, seeing is believing.
Seeing. So many people that we talk to, they're skeptics. They don't know what they believe, but the moment something happens to them, the moment they see it with their own eyes, above and beyond just the feeling of a touch or coldness of the room changing, when they see something, they know it's there. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the end of our premiere episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We thank you for joining us. And remember, if you want to follow us, please find us at ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com.
Thank you for joining us.
us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.